What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien. I am recording remote tonight from my medical office in Dedham, Massachusetts. Joining me, as always, the CEO of Hedge Better. We are here tonight to break down the debacle of a team in Foxborough that just seems like they are getting worse and worse and worse. Justin, my friend, what's going on? What are your thoughts? What'd you think about that garbage on Sunday?
Well, you know what? I gotta be honest. I think this says everything that you need to say, which is the fact that I watched it minimally. I was more interested in Bills and Lions and Steelers, Eagles, and you know what? That was just kind of the misfit game in the 4 o'clock window. I mean, obviously, you know, try to tune in as much as I could, but you know, tough to compete with the entertainment levels of some of those other matchups. And I think, you know what, the result was pretty blah. There was really not, you didn't really miss much if you didn't tune in.
You did not miss very much at all. It was a dead game. It was a flat game. We had talked about last week, what is this team going to look like?
Yeah.
Given the fact they were like 3-10 and going into a bye week in week 14, like what's this going to look like on the other side of that bye week?
Yep.
And the reality is it did not look very good. They looked flat. They looked like they weren't ready to play an NFL game. And it showed very much in terms of the results on the field. It was not a great performance from the Patriots. And frankly, Justin, it really wasn't a great performance from the Cardinals, because a better team, I think, beats that Patriots team by way more than they even did already.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Cardinals kind of played down to their competition. They didn't have their best game, and they still won by two scores, right? So I think that and this is a team that's, you know, struggling to fight for a playoff spot on their own. So I think that says a lot about kind of the state of this Patriots team and where they're at right now in terms of competing.
It does, Justin. And like the scary part is you say that, and the reality is this final score, 30-17, it was not even as close as the game, as the score indicated.
Yeah.
You know, like you look at a 30-17, you say, okay, maybe that's a borderline competitive game. This was a blowout, really, you know, for all intents and purposes. And it was a blowout with the Cardinals really not even playing that well and still really should have won this game like 35-10 or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this Cardinals team, they've been scrappy all year. You know, they've beaten a couple decent teams. They found a way to hang in and play meaningful football, but like it's not the type of team that you would say that the Patriots, you know, is beaten down as they are. It's not the type of team that you would say there's no way they can't compete. Like you would at least expected a little bit more, or should I say I hoped for a little bit more. But it was just kind of a letdown, I think, on all fronts.
I thought this should be a winnable game for the Patriots. I don't think the Cardinals are that much better than the Patriots talent-wise. I really don't. And I think May is probably a better quarterback than Kyler Murray already. You know, I mean, we're not playing the Detroit Lions or the Chiefs here, you know, against the Cardinals. This is a game the Patriots should be able to be competitive in, and they really weren't. And I think that is a really concerning indicator about where this team is right now.
Yeah, totally agree. You know, and I know we're going to get into this, you know, Mayo, Van Pelt, some of the comments surrounding, you know.
We're going to get in all. We've Drake, got an awesome, awesome roster of topics tonight.
Yeah. So I'll save it for, you know, until we get into that. But I will just say, I think it's interesting that like what came out of that game is just like probably the most misleading headline, because Drake May's lack of designed runs are like probably one of the last reasons why this team is struggling to compete and win football games. So it's like, it's funny that that's what catches the headlines and the buzz.
But Justin, do you know what is crazy about that? And we'll kick it off in a second. We're going to start talking about Mayo in a second, but just cause you brought this up, I think it's nuts that they don't have designed run plays for Drake May when you have a quarterback this mobile.
I agree.
Don't ever give. But what I think is even extra nuts beyond that is the fact that this is common knowledge amongst the football viewing world. Like, how do you let the cat out of the bag that you're not doing design runs for this guy? And the fact that the whole football world now knows that you will not run your quarterback on a design run.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, again, it speaks to the inexperience of Jerod Mayo and the coaching staff. And it speaks to get just another mistake in terms of like Drake May's use and development. Like, look, I get it. Like, maybe you consider this a, you know, this season's obviously over and done with. You're not trying to get the kid hurt for the end of the year heading into year two. But like, by the same token, it's like you're not letting him reach his full ability. You're hindering his development. Like, the kid is clearly athletic. He's clearly mobile. And it could clearly be a useful tool in his bag. But, you know, it's just, again, I just bring it back to my original point that, yes, it's crazy that they're not doing more of it, but there's a lot of other reasons why this team is losing.
There are, but Justin, let me ask you this, right? So we're talking about design runs for Drake May. Do quarterback sneaks even count as design runs? Like, okay, we're not doing the Lamar Jackson, you know, up the middle kind of stuff, the crazy bootlegs. We're not doing that, fine. When you need a half a yard in a key spot in the game, you can't do a quarterback sneak because you don't do design runs. I think that's absurd. Now, I will qualify that comment by saying I don't think it was crazy what they did to hand the ball to their running back twice in that spot. I mean, come on. Right. You should be able to get that half yard. Blame your offensive line, not your offensive coordinator. But all that said, you can't do a quarterback sneak there. It's forbidden.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I really curious, you know, to learn more about like what these internal like sets of rules and restrictions are that these guys, you know, have in place down in Foxborough. I mean, we've gotten glimpses into it, but you know what? You just wonder what else is under the hood, like what other kind of unwritten or unspoken, or maybe they are written and spoken rules are in place for this quarterback and for this team.
Yeah. And who's making those rules?
Right.
Because and this is one of the things we're going to get into is like this Mayo comment again after the game about you said it, I didn't, really throwing Alex Van Pelt on the bus. Gerard Mayo is the head coach of this team. Is he not making those rules? Is that not his rule?
Yeah.
To the, you know, and what other rule? Who's making the rules? What other rules are there? It just speaks to a very dysfunctional operation. Let's kick it off, Justin,
because
we're kind of going down that road anyways. And I think the top story in Patriots Nation right now is 100% the scrutiny and the intensity on Gerard Mayo and the fact that, you know, I told you last week I felt like he was coaching for his football life, his coaching future in these last four games. And I think that there were conflicting reports this week about that, right? Jacina Anderson from the NFL Network that Mayo was safe. Reports from Mike Reese, Greg Bedard, even Tom Curran a little bit, now saying the opposite, very much in doubt. So I still think Mayo is coaching for his football future these last 3 weeks. I think he took a huge setback in that regard on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals. To me, Justin, this was the second time in the last 3 weeks, the three games, that they were outclassed by a mediocre team or a below mediocre team that isn't going to make the playoffs. It happened in Miami, and now it happened against Arizona. And sandwiched in the middle of that is they lost to a Colts team that was really not that good either. They have a better quarterback, a far better quarterback than they had last year. They have a better cornerback than they had last year. They have an all-pro caliber cornerback. They have better players, elite level players, you could say, at two of the most important positions on the field. And yet they still can't win games. Their defense is still atrocious. Okay. They have the easiest schedule in the league. Add it all up and somehow they are worse. What I'm telling you, Justin, right now is you're seeing the implosion of Gerard Mayo. And what I walked away from Sunday, and you might disagree with this, is that one, I think they need to completely clean house. That's Wolf, that's Mayo, that's everyone. Bring in a whole new regime into Foxborough. And then number two, this decision and what they do with Gerard Mayo this year represents the turning point for who is in control of this organization. Because if it's Robert Kraft, I think Gerard Mayo is back next year.
Yep.
If it's Jonathan Kraft, I think Gerard Mayo will be gone next year. And I think that gentle sort of tug of war or passing of the baton, if you will, is going, this whole thing is a huge referendum on that. If Jonathan Kraft has the power, if it's Jonathan Kraft's show now, then Gerard Mayo will be fired this year.
I totally agree with that. You know, I think some of the reports have hinted that that's kind of where the power struggle lies, right? Jonathan Kraft would probably rather move on. In Robert Kraft has got that kind of sentimental, you know, emotional attachment to Jerod Mayo. I look at it and I say, you know, a full cleaning, a full house clean. It's almost like it's so bittersweet because it's, you know, on one hand, I think that it's probably necessary. I think that we got the wrong coaching staff in there. And I think that if we bring them back, we're just delaying the inevitable, right? Elliot Wolf, you know, when he first came in, I think, you know, we came on and said, you know, we were kind of okay with a couple of things that he was doing. But now, you know, there's kind of, I think, more than meets the eye in terms of like where he has his hands and in the decisions that he's making. And, you know, I think it's leaving some of us scratching our head. So it's like, it's not that I disagree in saying that, like, you know, we could probably clean house and bring in a whole new regime. But like, doesn't that just feel so devastating for this organization to, like, after you lose Brady, you lose Belichick, like you lose a ton of your front office guys and your staff. And then after 1 year trying to rebuild it, you do it all again. Like, it's so, I think, defeating and deflating.
It is, but are you going to double down on anyone from this regime and give them, like, you're going to have, again, a ton of draft capital. You're going to have a ton of salary cap room. And are you going to give the keys to the car to Elliot Wolf again? Like, yes, he hit on Drake May. I think most people would have taken Drake May in that spot. I don't think that was a crazy pick.
I agree.
It was hugely important. Fine. Give him credit for that. His free agent class this year was a freaking disaster. Okay. You look at the tackle Okorafor, the KJ Osborne. You look at the Jalen Polk pick in this draft. It is an absolute unchecked, unmitigated disaster. He missed on everything else he did. We talk about what Mayo has done to earn another year. What has Elliot Wolf done to make you think he deserves another bite at the apple? Because this has been an F minus from Elliot Wolf this year.
Yeah. You know, you talk a little bit about Elliot Wolf in, you know, early on, we said that he wanted to kind of bring that, you know, Green Bay Packers philosophy to New England. I mean, look, and that's what the Packers do, right? You know, they do kind of minimal work, I think, in free agency, right? They do a lot of drafting, development, and retaining their players. But obviously, you got to hit on guys in order to make that sustainable, right? And clearly, other than Drake May, as you mentioned, it doesn't look like he had too many hits in this first draft. I could also understand, too, and the free agent side of things, saying you're not going to go too overboard and commit to too much big spending and big money contracts until you know that you have the right quarterback to build around. But you do know that now. I mean, now that's confirmed. I would be very interested to see approaching this offseason when you have, you know, an heir apparent and you have the biggest biggest budget in your salary cap in the league, like you can spend the most money. I'd be really curious to see what he does with that in the offseason. The one thing I will say that's also out of his control too is, you know, we heard rumors all offseason on some big names that the Patriots were potentially in, and ultimately, you know, things didn't go our way. But you got to wonder, I mean, you know, a lot of that is probably due to the fact that this is not a marketable franchise, and it certainly was even less marketable before we knew that we hit on Drake May, right? So I can see a lot of guys not wanting to choose to come here in free agency. So I think there's a lot of factors at play, but I think now that you know you got the quarterback and you got the ability to go out and spend money, I'd be really interested to see what happens, you know, this offseason.
It should be easier to attract talent here this year just because they do have Drake.
Right.
And I think agree. This is still a good place to be. I think it's a good franchise in a good market. And you know, but you have to pay to get talent here. And the thing is, Justin, the things they did last year where they did get players swung and missed. Like they wanted to get a swing tackle that could hold down the fort at tackle while they drafted a player and developed them, right? Well, they missed on that swing tackle. Like there were guys out there, they had money. They brought in Okorafor. They thought they were being the smartest guy in the room by bringing in Okorafor. We're not paying $17 million a year for Jonah Williams. We can get the same player with Chuks Okorafor for $5 million a year. Yeah. Well, how did that work out? He quit after 1 week, right? These are the kind of everything Elliot Wolf did this year, and I was someone that was supportive of Wolf. You can pull the tapes from back in March. I said he was a strength and asset, but everything he did was such an unmitigated disaster. I wouldn't hate it if they brought him back another year and gave him another chance. I don't think he's earned it. Fine. But here's the thing. Are you going to pass on a guy like Thomas Dimitroff, right, who's available? If you could have a Vrabel, Dimitroff, Josh McDaniels as your offensive coordinator, are you going to pass on that to double down on this leadership team after the year that they just had? I don't see how you could do that. If I'm Kraft, I am bringing out my checkbook. I'm paying top dollar for those three guys, and I'm getting three guys in here that I know, at least know how to pilot the ship. Because I think right now, the people they have here, I don't know if they can do it.
I mean, I totally agree. I think the biggest thing you're looking at, the biggest factor goes back to kind of how you kicked this conversation off by saying it really depends on where the decision-making lies and who's really in charge, right? Because I find it very difficult to believe that Robert Kraft would do that. I do think it's the right choice, but I don't know. It just seems like that's so...
Well, Kraft is too emotionally invested.
Exactly. It just seems like he's too close to this. That's not a good place. He's a businessman, right?
Doesn't he know not to make decisions based on his emotions? But he did here.
I agree. And that's and you know what? I think he still is in control, right? I think, you know, Jonathan Kraft, I think it's kind of like, hey, you know, you don't fully get the reins yet. You know, it's kind of like, you know, operating with my blessing type of thing. And I'm going to be really curious to see like how that plays out. I'd be very curious because you know what, look, it's easy to say that, oh, if it happens that Jonathan Kraft made that decision, but I would really like to see Robert Kraft make that decision on his own, because that tells me that that's still a guy who's hungry to win. He's hungry to put the best, product in the field. He wants to do what's best for the organization. All the things that we credited Robert Kraft for during that double dynasty run that we had. I mean, you know, it's just, it's things that we would expect him to do now, but I don't know. I just think he's too emotionally involved with Gerard Mayo.
He is. And I think what you have now, when you saw it on Sunday with the camera from the luxury box and Jonathan taking notes and, you know, complaining about the play calling and the lip readers reading that, like, Jonathan, I think, is chirping at Robert. And Jonathan, I think, is the one that's telling Robert, you can't bring these guys back. You have to change this. These guys don't know what they're doing. Yeah. You know, you're running derelict of your responsibility as an owner. You're running this organization to the ground. We have to get rid of these guys. And it's really going to be interesting to see who comes out on top, because let's face it, you know, eventually it is going to be Jonathan's show. And I think, look, if now is the time when that happens, and the price of getting Mayo out of here is the fact that now Jonathan Kraft has more influence, So be it. Because I don't think they could have handled this transition away from Brady or Belichick any worse than they've done the last 4 years. So maybe it is a little time for a little bit of a new leadership too.
Yeah. I agree. And, you know, I think to go back to that point, you know, and clearly Jonathan Kraft is feeling the urgency and this is a guy who wants to do what's best for the organization. It baffles me that Robert Kraft, like you said, as a businessman, as you know, somebody who should be very used to and accustomed to making tough, difficult decisions, I find it crazy that this guy would watch his franchise get to this point and not be able to overcome an emotional attachment to step in and make the right decision in order to fix it. Like, it just doesn't seem on par with everything we know.
Yeah, I mean, look, all due respect to Mr. Kraft, brilliant man, brilliant owner, very lucky to have him. It really makes you question how he's making decisions at this point in his life, because this was such a that's just it. I mean, being honest, right?
Yeah.
Great guy, great owner. Don't understand how he got to the place where he thought Gerard Mayo was a good idea. None of what we're going to talk about today, when we talk about Gerard Mayo, none of this is Gerard Mayo's fault, in my opinion. I feel sorry for Gerard Mayo. I feel sorry. He's in way over his head. He's 5 to 10 years away. He was put in a position he had no business being put into. Now, do you remember back a few years ago when Carolina supposedly wanted to hire Mayo and in the crafts meet, I think that's when they made their commitment to him. Yep. But it's like, you know, clearly this guy was completely unready for what was thrust upon him. And I feel sorry for him, but it was ultimately, face it, a Robert Kraft mistake.
It was a Robert Kraft mistake. And I would
and even say, that cringeworthy press conference, Justin, go back. Yes. Which, by the way, remember who didn't attend that press conference?
Was it Jonathan?
Yeah, didn't go to that press conference, right? But that cringeworthy. Remember we talked about it. We compared it to when he met his wife. Oh my god!
Yeah. So, and I'm glad you said that because that's exactly where I land with this. Is to me, and I don't know. You may feel differently. To me, it's less about giving Gerard Mayo a chance if you think he's the right guy and want to retain talent that you have in your organization. It's less about giving him a chance, and it's more so the conviction and the rationale and the level of emotion that you let get involved in making that decision, propping him up as the heir apparent, making it seem like there's all these, like, you know, spiritual and otherworldly reasons for why he should be your next coach. It's like, I would respect it much more if you just said, hey, we think this guy's talented. He's homegrown. He's been in our organization his entire life. Like, let's give him a chance, right? But the way you announced him, that whole press conference, to your point, the way you presented him as the guy definitively and for all these different reasons, that to me, I think, just makes it 10 times worse and that much harder to move on from.
It does, Justin, and it speaks to a dysfunctional process that predictably has been a disaster. Like, I think that all of us expected to lose this year. Nobody expected this team to be in the Super Bowl.
Right.
I mean, we were hoping for a respectable, decent year this year, but that was the ceiling, was like 7, 8, 9 wins. The over-under was 4.5. Like, we all expected losing. But what's happened this year is beyond losing. It's not about the losing. Yes. It's the way it's looked. And the way it's looked every week from the second he got in this position has told us Gerard Mayo is not ready for this position. And that's both on and off the field, where he continues to put his foot in his mouth in, like, bizarre and new ways, not learning his lesson, to just not say what you think you should say. And it has really been ugly. And I don't think Gerard Mayo is going to get fired for being 3-11. I think he's going to get fired because he is just in so far over his head, and it shows, and it's looked, it's been a debacle. It has to be a debacle to get fired after 1 year. And it has been a debacle.
It has been. And it doesn't look like it's getting better as the season goes along. Like, that I think is the ultimate benchmark, right? It's not how bad it start, but how does it finish? That's always been the benchmark for this Patriots team, right? And you know what? I get it. You got a different coach, a different quarterback. It's obviously not going to be the same in terms of expectations. But I think the philosophy still remains and holds true. And I think it's the same with any team in any sport, any organization. Do you get better and improve as the year goes along, or do you get worse? And this is a team that they're definitely not getting better. And you can argue that things are getting worse.
Justin, and I had this conversation with a few of my friends this week, and they said, well, what did you expect? It's not fair. This is what everyone says. Right. It's not fair to fire Mayo after 1 year. And I'm like, well, I don't care if it's fair or not. Like, you're going to double down on a bad decision. Guess what? You're going to get greater losses, right?
Yep.
But they say it's not fair. But what's amazing to me is that people are making Mac Jones era excuses and expectations for this team. And this is the Drake May era. We have a better quarterback. You know, so we should be able to win games. There's no reason that this franchise can't be the Commanders or the Broncos or the Seahawks have a rookie coach and they're going to make the playoffs, except the fact that the coach and the GM of this team have blown and continue to blow every decision of relevance related to this franchise, more or less, from January 6th on. People say, like, what do you expect? How about, can I give you a few things that I expect? Because I expected losing, but can I say three things that I expected?
Yeah.
I expected them to show progress. They haven't done. They're regressing. I expected them to build a culture and a foundation, which they have done. They've done the opposite. It's been a disaster in that locker room. And I expected them to at least be decent on defense, because they have a defensive coordinator, supposedly, as their head coach. None of those three things happened. The defense has regressed so bad. That is a huge red flag in of itself. So like we expect losing, but there are things within losing that you want to see and you're just not seeing them.
Exactly. And you know what, you can take the Patriots out of this equation for a second. I mean, you know, for as long as we've been watching football, and especially you, I mean, you know, you can see, you know, you think back over the years, you can see, and it's not just us, right? Good fans, good analysts, they're able to see good teams in the making, right? Like you can just tell when, you know, you see a team that maybe has a 4 or 5 win season, but you say, oh, this team's going to be good next year. Oh, this, look out for this team next year. They got a lot to build on. There's a lot that like is positive that they can look back and take away from this year and feel and hang their hats on and feel good about. But like, again, other than Drake May, I can't put my finger on really anything that this organization gives me confidence on heading into next year. Again, you could take Christian Gonzalez and maybe a couple of isolated members of the organization, but like, seriously, it's really all just been a regression.
It's been a regression. They're getting worse. And I've mentioned this several times throughout the year. This is before your time, but it is the perfect, perfect comparison. And that is the 93 Patriots when they drafted Drew Bledsoe. He started off very poor. He got way better as the year went on. Bill Parcells was the coach. That team was playing great by the end of the year. They won their last 4 games. You went into 94 feeling like this team's going to be good. They made the playoffs in 94. It is the complete opposite with this team. Now that 93 team is a good example of how a team can go 5-11. Yep. Okay. And make you feel like, okay, I feel good about this team. I feel good which way we're headed. This team has none of that. They have none of that. It's the complete opposite. They are regressing and getting worse. And the off the field stuff is getting worse. It's just all feels like it's headed in the wrong direction.
It does. It really does. And if it's feels like that to us, you gotta wonder how it feels inside the organization, inside the locker room, to these guys that are expected to go out there and perform and play week in and week out. And you wonder if, you know, you're starting to compound on bad results, which is the fact that you got guys now in this locker room that are double or really don't know anything other than this culture of losing, this culture of mistakes. And you just really wonder if it's preventing these guys from being able to take that next step forward as a team, because they're not able to build any momentum.
Well, you just kind of hit on this, but I think this is important. I'm going to give you 2 more takes on Mayo before we move on. Quick ones, okay? Number one is, what have we been saying all year? Well, at least they're playing hard. At least they're playing hard.
Yeah.
They're not really playing that hard anymore. In fact, if you go back and look, I can count 6 times this year, 6 games, and I'll name them for you in a second, where this team has quit for all or some of that game. All right? Can I go through my list?
Yeah, yeah.
49ers, the first Jets game,
yeah.
The Texans game,
yeah.
For a time they quit. The Dolphins, the Cardinals, and I'm missing one other one. There were 6 games this year where they have quit at some point. So if you look across the league, all these teams are playing hard. The Patriots have quit more than any of these other bad teams like the Jags or the Bears or the Jets. You know, they're all still playing hard week in and week out. The Patriots have quit more than most of these other bad teams. So I think we need to stop saying, well, Gerard Mayo has them playing hard. They've quit plenty of times this year.
Yeah, and I think that last team you were looking for, coincidentally enough, was the Jags. They quit on it and they quit in London.
They quit after, in the Jags. That's exactly right.
100%. You know? So,
yep.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, maybe this team is getting and you know, as you pointed out, there are plenty of teams around the league that, you know, have poor records and, you know, they're not really playing for anything else this season, but they're coming out and they're playing hard. So it's like you really can't use that anymore as something to hang your hat on with this organization, because A, it's not something that's unique to them, and B, they're not actually playing as hard consistently throughout the season as maybe some people think. So That's definitely, you know, a big red flag. It comes down to does this group of guys in the locker room feel like they're working towards a common goal, right? Like, do these guys feel like they're coming each week to get better, because there's a long-term vision, because they're part of that long-term vision, because this is a team that can go win 8, 9, 10 games next year, because this is a team that can win the AFCs 2 years from now, be a Super Bowl contender 3 years from now. Like, is that the type of culture that they're building and the thoughts that they're fostering? And it's really tough to see that being the case.
Well, it's actually, no, I can answer that. No, yeah. It's not. Like, they have failed at building culture. That was one of Gerard Mayo's stated objectives going into this year, was we're going to build a culture. They have not built a culture. I think you look back at that Bengals game in week one, and I think that was more the residue of the Belichick culture than it was actually the groundwork or foundation of a new Mayo culture. The whole idea of a culture around this team has just deteriorated over the course of the year. And it's actually getting to the point where it's kind of ugly. You know, people are like, players are speaking out. I don't know, did you hear Kayshawn Booty this week? Like, throwing each other under the bus. It's the complete opposite of that.
Yeah, totally. And you just got to wonder, at what point does the culture become irreversible to the point where you might need to start shipping some of these guys off and bringing in fresh faces?
I think it's going to be a huge problem going into next year. And yeah. I think it's one of the many arguments that you should make for moving on from Mayo, which is that he has done so much damage to the culture, to the psyche, to the atmosphere of this team with all the stupid things he said, that I just think he's got to have a lot of people pissed off at him in that locker room, a lot of burn bridges, guys upset at him. And he's going into next year actually in a worse place than this year in terms of like needing to build culture. So really think about it. He's got to even have more of an uphill battle than he did. Let me give you my second take on Mayo, Justin. It ties into this perfectly, which so I want to bring it up right now, which is that we've said all year, oh, he's a leader. He is not a good leader as we thought he was. At this point now, when things are getting ugly, he's throwing people under the bus left and right. He threw his offensive coordinator under the bus this week. He threw his players under the bus 2 weeks ago when he said, I can only do so much for them when they get on the field. Isn't that your job, Gerard? You know, to prepare them. You think Belichick would ever say that? He called them soft. He called them weak. He's questioned Elliot Wolf or thrown Elliot Wolf under the bus a few times. I'm sorry. Like, the leadership, this guy, he comes off more like a corporate weasel than an actual leader at this point with some of the things he said publicly.
Exactly. Look, you know, it comes off more as arrogance than leadership, right? Like, you look, there's people, you could deal with them. It doesn't matter. Professional setting, personal setting, doesn't matter. There are certain people that you know that they're just always dodging accountability and responsibility, right? There's always, you know, there's always a reason for something. There's always an excuse for something. There's always somebody else who's at fault. And that's just like kind of what I'm starting to get from Gerard Mayo, which is the fact that like in his mind, he is a great leader and other people aren't holding up their end of the bargain. Like, that's how I think he truly like views his fellow staff and his players.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. He points the, he's doing so much finger pointing. He's doing more finger pointing than John Travolta in friggin'
Step
5. You know what I mean? Exactly. He's pointed up. It really, I think, is again, like, let's stop calling this guy a leader. He's not showing great leadership the last few weeks. All right, let me give you a few more quick Pats takes, Justin, and then we're going to move on to the non-football topic of the week, which I think is going to be a great one.
Yeah.
One, Alex Van Pelt. I think we got to talk about this guy a little bit, because here's my take on Alex Van Pelt, and I want to see what you think about it. We are all operating on the assumption that it is going to be the Patriots' choice about whether to bring Alex Van Pelt back or not. Now, Alex Van Pelt has frustrated me at times. His play calling is too conservative, especially in the red zone. It's been a problem. I think he's put the restraining bolt on May. I think it's been a mistake. I think it's held May back. He's also done a terrific job developing May, and he has not been a disaster. He's not. He's been okay, right? And his team sucked. Let's not forget that. Yeah. Alex Van Pelt is going to walk away at the end of this year. I believe he has a one-year contract. Why would he want to come back to this clown show after his coaches threw him under the bus? You know, think about that.
I mean, look, if my head coach was out there throwing me under the bus for something, I'd be a little ticked off. And I think,
why does he want to come back to this?
I could totally see him not wanting to come back to this. And you know what I think is extra unfair about that comment? And, you know, this may be the case, but we don't know this, is, you know, Gerard Mayo's comment implies that it's basically Van Pelt's call, right? But we don't know if there's other forces at play coming down from higher up in the organization that are kind of influencing Van Pelt's decision to not make these, to not, you know, scheme up these designed runs and whatnot. Like, Mayo's comment really puts the blame squarely on Van Pelt's shoulders. And unless Van Pelt comes out and says otherwise, like, what is the general public or the fans supposed to take from that? So it's like, that would tick me off as much as anything. That not only am I getting thrown under the bus, but I could potentially be getting thrown under the bus in the public's eyes for something that's over my head, or at least I'm only a part of the decision, not the deciding factor.
100%. And like, honestly, Justin, it is Gerard Mayo's decision what to do in that situation.
It should be.
It should be his decision. Right. You're the head coach. This is Gerard Mayo being super inexperienced and not really knowing how to have a voice and say, no, we need to run a quarterback sneak here, right? Like, to me, that's – so it all falls back to Mayo. So to sit there and blame Van Pelt, I thought it was one of the worst things I've ever heard a coach say, completely throwing – someone that's been loyal to him under the bus. I'm telling you right now, like, this guy, he might walk away Van Pelt at the end of this year. And then where would you find an offensive coordinator? And I think that's another reason why you have to think about getting rid of Mayo, because who are you going to get to be your assistant coaches when you're a lame duck head coach who's got the sword, you know, dangling over his neck going into the season? You're going to pick the bottom of the barrel for offensive assistant, defensive assistants at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wonder if you're the Crafts in this organization, are you even thinking about a possibility of saying, well, we clean house except for Van Pelt? Like, is that a guy that you consider saying, hey, let's see what he can do with the right head coach and the right GM?
I think that's a brilliant idea. If he would be willing to do that, and the head coach and the new GM would be willing to do that, I think you'd have to consider that, because then you get that continuity with May. Alex Van Pelt has really not been terrible this year. And I think it's important for us to remember that he is completely hamstrung by this offensive line and receiver group. Like, let's not pretend that he's got a lot to work with here. They got nothing. So he's making chicken salad out of chicken crap, like, every week.
I totally agree. And one other thing that I think is super important and can't really be overstated enough here is that if you decide to truly clean house and move on, right? Mayo's gone, Van Pelt's gone, Wolf's gone, etc. Each time you go through that process of cleaning house in reintroducing a new hierarchy into your organization, it becomes that much more critical that you get it right, because you are at a certain point. How many times have we heard, you know, when you talk about quarterbacks or star players or people that just aren't developing the way you thought they were when they entered the league? And then you hear, oh, well, you know, he's on his third offensive coordinator in 3 years, or he's, you know, look, this is his second head coach in 2 years. You know, you hear these things. It's not rocket science. Like, those things are bad for development. That constant turnover, not having consistency, not having a clear, you know, framework for and direction for where this organization is heading, that is one of the worst things you can do for a young quarterback or just any rookie or young player in general. So it's like, if you're going to clean house and get rid of these guys after you think you have a diamond in the rough in Drake May, it is so important to get it right. Or you could be sitting there going, yeah, well, you know, Drake May, what's he supposed to do? He's on his third offensive coordinator in 3 years. He's on his third head coach in 3 years.
Yes, and you got the valuable rookie contract thing. I mean, you got this four-year window here where you've got this guy at a terrific cap number. You can't waste that. If you know that it's probably not going to work out with Mayo and this whole group, it's okay to move on and really take maximize this critical time where you have this rookie quarterback who we think is a good quarterback on a contract. Justin, I want to do 3 minutes on Drake May and then 3 minutes on the defense. Then we're going to move to the non-football topic of the week.
How's Let's that do sound? It. Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Can I just say something about this defense? We have talked so much about Van Pelt and Mayo. Covington, we mentioned his name far less. He's totally skating a little bit in all this too. Like, this defense is really bad. And what really I think is amazing about this defense, you look across the NFL, and when a team has a player like Christian Gonzalez, and we've talked for years about how they don't have elite talent, Christian Gonzalez this year has been elite talent. When you have a cornerback that literally can take away half of the field like this guy can, you should be able to have a good defense with anything at all around him. And yet they're the worst defense in the league against the easiest schedule in the league. I think it is stunning to me how bad this defense is.
Yeah, the defense is just totally, totally collapsed. And again, you know, we've said this multiple times, but coming into this year before everything started happening, the defense, I had way less questions about the defense than Drake May and the offense. Like, that was where I was saying, okay, we can at least get a little stability from this defense. And it's been the exact opposite issues up to wazoo. I mean, this is a team that they cannot stop anybody, even the worst offenses and worst quarterbacks in the league. I mean, they made Will Levis and the Titans look serviceable. I mean, you know, this is just a botched job 101. And I'm not ready. I know this defense is missing some talented pieces. And when I say that, I don't just mean like injuries or trades. I mean like valuable components for making them a complete defense. But I look at the depth chart, I look at this roster. The defense is not devoid of talent. Like, the defense, the defense has some talented players at all three levels, which makes it just extra concerning.
Against this schedule, there's no reason they shouldn't be a top 15.
I agree.
Except for the fact that I think the coaches just don't know what they're doing.
Exactly. And then on top of that, you get Christian Barmore back. You get Jabril Peppers back, and you think maybe, okay, that could be the spark they needed to elevate their game. I haven't even noticed that the two of them are out there.
They've actually been a worse defense since Christian Barmore come back, which is something. Like, they really, I'd say the last like 5 or 6 weeks, they have been the worst defense in the NFL. And I mean, even last week against Arizona, you know, you score that late touchdown, there's about 8 minutes left in the game, there's an outside glimmer of hope down by two scores. If you get a quick stop and get the ball back, maybe you can make it a competitive game. What do? They give up a 6 minute drive, you know, rushing touchdown, get trounced. So I think it's something we don't talk about enough, is how bad this defense has been. And I don't think there's any excuse for it. I really don't. Like, the injuries, I think, the injury situation has been better this year than it was last year.
I totally agree. And yeah, you know, you could talk about Covington, but again, Jerod Mayo, he was the guy that was supposedly the defensive mind. He is the former linebacker. He is the guy that was coaching that defense up for all these years. I mean, but what good has it done? What's it showing?
Yeah, this is supposed to be Mayo's area of expertise, right?
Right.
Yeah, but I don't think he really has any of that. So, yeah. All right, and then let's talk very quick about May's performance and where he is. I mean, I just felt like they really put the restraining bolt on him. I felt like they didn't really let him go out there and make plays until late in that game. I thought he played an okay game. I think he's showing that he's generally in control. He's generally precise. He missed one or two throws. I don't blame him for the interception at all, because I think that's less than perfect throw. Come on, Kayshon Booty. You're an NFL receiver. You cannot do that. But I just think that overall, you know, he continues to show well in spite of the bad team around him, frankly.
Exactly. You watch Drake May in this offense, and you can't help but say to yourself, if this guy had some more talent around him, you'd only imagine what he'd be able to do. And I think that's a telltale sign that you probably have the right guy. He's just in a bad situation right now.
100%. I mean, when you consider the limitations around him, I mean, we've said it all year, he continues to do really well.
Right. I was just gonna say, whereas with Mac Jones had the same lack of talent, but you said to yourself, there's problems with this guy. There's issues with this guy, right? Like, he's part of the problem. And with Drake May, I think you say a little bit, I think you frame it completely differently. You say they don't have the talent, but if you put talent around him, Drake May will shine. But Mac Jones, we never saw any, I think, really glimmer. And that was...
I mean, that's a good point. That's something I was thinking of bringing up since you brought it up, maybe just quickly. You know, Mac Jones struggling in Jacksonville again. And it really does give a little bit of context to what happened here during the Mac Jones era. And I think we had this tug of war debate a lot about, was it Mac? Was it the circumstances around Mac? And I think what you're seeing now is that obviously the circumstances were bad, but Mac was probably never one that was going to have sustainable success in this league. And you were way quicker than I was to catch up to that. But I just think it does give a little context. When we talk about the demise of Belichick, you know, and if you were thinking Belichick kind of screwed Jones on the field, maybe that's a little bit true, but I really think it had more to do with the fact that just Mac was never the guy.
He was never the guy. And somehow still Belichick in McDaniels and that defense dragged into the playoffs his rookie year, right? So it's like, you know what? It does go to show you that even an average or below average quarterback, if you got the right coaching and some of the right pieces in play, you can drag them to a wild card spot.
They won 7 games with Cam Newton, who literally couldn't throw the ball.
Exactly.
Throwing to Demir Bird and what's the other guy? Philip Dorsett. You know, Belichick was a great coach. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. All right, let's go to the non-football topic of the week. Justin, I think this is a great topic. This is like the news story all over America. I want to hear your take on it. What is the deal with these drones in New Jersey? What's your take on it?
Okay. So two different, I guess it depends, right? If we want to go conspiracy for a second, right? I've heard some compelling theories that, and actually I saw a report that expanded on this kind of before this podcast, that there's some sort of medical device that is radioactive in nature. Maybe you'd know more about this, some sort of scanner. It showed up to the port in New Jersey, and it was missing from its container, and it had contents that could be used for some sort of dirty bomb. And the speculation is that these drones are actually being used as radiation detection drones, right, to try to find this missing piece of equipment. I don't know. That's one of the conspiracy theories that's out there. I think in more like
heard that one.
Okay. And I got no clue. I can't say whether that's viable or not. One thing that I think is interesting is, you know, it's almost like when somebody points something out to you and then you start noticing it, right? I almost wonder how many of these drone sightings are just normal occurrences that people are being like, oh, have you seen the news? There's a drone right there. And meanwhile, it's just some guy, you know, in the park with this kid getting photos. What I mean? It's like, you wonder how much the mass hysteria and the hype is playing into the reports that are coming out.
Well, totally true. Because, you know, my mother calls me the other night after she left my house on Sunday night at 9 o'clock. And she's like, just so you know, your father and I, we saw drones on the way home. And I'm like, Mom, you did not see drones on the way home. Stop it. And if you did, it's not even a big deal because there's nothing illegal about it.
Right.
But I think that's 95% of it now. It's become a self-fulfilling thing where look, there are millions of drones in this, you know, things, people, there's airplanes. You can't trust your perception when you look up at the sky. You may think something is one size. It's really not, bigger or smaller based on the angle and the speed and everything. So now it's become a thing where everyone's looking up there.
Right.
And it's every time someone sees something, oh my God, it's another drone. So it's become hysteria. That said, there does seem to be a lot centered around the New Jersey thing. And I don't know, but I will say this. Have you ever watched that television show, The Holiday, The Great Christmas Light Fight? Have you ever seen that show where they have people show their Christmas displays.
And they create and like art in the sky with the drones.
Yes. And yes. What people can do with drones, Justin, is crazy. So yeah. When you tell me you're seeing, you know, 12 drones in formation, there was one family on that show that literally sent up hundreds of drones into the air and made like a Santa Claus and a nativity and like a Rudolph. So people can do crazy things with drones.
Yeah, totally. Watch it. It's just a bunch of people rehearsing for their holiday pageants. Like, you don't know, right? I mean, look, it does seem to – part of me, you know, look, it'd be crazy to not say that there is something maybe weird about it. Like, okay, is it all mass hysteria? Is it all people just starting to notice stuff now? I'm sure there's some sort of maybe increased level of activity. It would be totally kind of weird to me if this was all just a manufactured crisis, right? Like, I feel like there's something maybe – just nudging people in that direction. And I don't know what that is, but you know, it's to your point, right? Over time, like the fish gets that much bigger as you retell the story.
Yes.
Right.
And absolutely.
And I'm sure maybe there's an uptick in drone sightings. Maybe there's more of them out there for whatever reason, but I think the narratives and the mass hysteria is feeding it to a whole new level that maybe we don't, you know, where we should be.
And the Pentagon even said that today, like 95% of these are just not what people think they are. Right. And I believe that 100%.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'll say about this is that everything that everyone has seen, I've seen a few videos, I'm sure you've seen them too. There's nothing I've seen that one person or a group of people could not be capable of doing. Agreed. If they wanted to. And I think that people need, it might not be anything crazy. It might just be like a group of people that are trying to make a political statement.
Yeah.
You know, the election was last month. A lot of these drones have flown over Trump's golf course in New Jersey and stuff.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as that. But whether there's anything conspiratorial or on, I mean, I think that's unlikely. I mean, I don't think it's Martians, right? Because the things are lit up like a friggin', I mean, you know what I mean? Like you lit up your drone. I don't think it's the Chinese. What are they going to have? Light up drones coming over New Jersey. At least they'd be dark if they did it. So I don't know what it is. And the other thing I'll say is this, if the government wanted to end this, they could end it in a second. For whatever reason, they're letting this go on. Maybe they want to see what they're looking at. Maybe, you know, whatever it is, the government could end this in a second. Sometimes they let these things go on, I think, to kind of tease out what they're actually, there's intelligence in seeing what this, whoever's doing this would do.
Yeah. And look, maybe it's as simple as this is some sort of test or, you know, something that the government is trying out to see if this has applications for future scenarios. I mean, you never know. Like the government's the government. They're always up to stuff.
That's right.
And it's and it's funny because like the government is up to a ton of different things for a ton of different reasons, operating in a whole different set of knowledge and facts than the general public is. So the general public's now trying to see things and interpret them with their general public knowledge, right? You know, it's that, it reminds me of that scene, you know, with Dan Aykroyd in the elevator in Tommy Boy, when he turns to David Spade and Chris Farley, and he says, you know, what the American public doesn't know is what makes them the American public.
Oh, yeah, that's a great
one. And that's like exactly, I think, like what's going on here, which is what the American public doesn't know is what makes them the American public. And as good as like the internet and social media and like everything has been for like, you know, getting information out there, you know, at warp speed, it's also, you know, created a ton of opportunities for people to start these conspiracies and fake information and all sorts of stuff. So it's like, you know, you really don't know what's happening right now.
You don't, Justin, but I think my take home from this would be there's something going on in New Jersey. It could be as simple as one person or a group of people trying to whatever, stir something up. And 99% of this is now just paranoid people that have read things on the internet, that are seeing things that aren't there or that are there, but they're not what they think they are. That's like 99% of this.
Right. Well, quick question for you, because I know you said you heard of this, right? Has you or anybody else in the medical community, you know, is there any sort of buzz as far as like, hey, there is a medical device that went missing that could have contained radioactive material?
I heard the rumor. I read the rumor on Barstool Sports, probably just like you did.
Yeah.
So that's where I heard it. It's all viral. And then Funnily, Boomer Esiason on his weekly radio interview on WEI referenced it. That was probably the first place I heard it. Huh. And maybe it is something like that. I don't know, but yeah, I've not heard anything like through back channels or anything like that.
Interesting. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, and look, I get it. And you know, somebody was saying if that was the case, right, that's a perfectly good example of why the government wouldn't want to come out and lend credence to it. Because the last thing you need is your people scared that there's some sort of dirty bomb or nefarious, you know, sort of thing totally. Going on at play. So yeah, look, if that was the case, I would expect the government to keep that under wraps. Not saying obviously it is the case, but I guess you just don't really know. But I think we're both, I think, under the impression that regardless of what's happening, there is a certain element that's being added to it by the mass hysteria.
And you know, I'll say one more thing, totally apolitical, but just a fact, I think. Trump has got a little bit of Gerard Mayo in him and that he'll just barf out stream of consciousness. Yeah. And I do wish he almost was already in power or within the 30 days, because I guarantee you he would just blurt it out there. Like, I don't think he's got that Gerard Mayo thing where he's like, you know, if it's in my mind, I sometimes say it without really thinking about the implications.
I agree. Well, he said, and I think it was earlier today, he came out and said, oh yeah, the government knows why and they should tell people. I don't know why they're not telling people. Right. So it's you know, he's implying that, yeah, we know exactly what's going on. You just don't know about it. So,
No doubt. All right, let's take a quick look ahead at this game against Buffalo. Because that red streak that you're going to see whizzing through the sky is not on Sunday, is not a drone, and it's not Santa sleigh. It's the Buffalo Bills in their red uniforms hanging 60 points on the Patriots. You tell me, when you see what Arizona and Miami and Indianapolis have done to this defense, Justin, how – I mean, Buffalo can. It feels like Buffalo will be able to hang 60 points against this team if they really want to.
I totally agree. The only scenario that I could see playing out is Buffalo just had back-to-back weeks, barn burners, leaving it all out in the field with the Rams in the Lions. And maybe they're looking at this as like a quasi bye week. Like, hey, we can take our foot off the gas and have it down. I don't know. Not saying that this team would do that. Not saying that's what's going to happen. But them looking past this week to the end of the season or to the playoffs is probably about the only damn near thing I can think of that could cause this game to be somewhat competitive.
Agreed. But I also think, look, I could see the Patriots scoring some points against Buffalo. I don't know if even – I mean, it's so hard for me to imagine a scenario where this defense, even if the Bills come out flat. I mean, if the Bills come out and they're on their A game, they should score 50 points against this terrible defense.
Easy.
If the Bills come out on their C game, they should still hang like 28 points. I mean, right?
All right.
Because it's that bad.
I agree. And, you know, the one thing I will say too is that divisional games, rivalry games, they're always weird, right? When you're playing another team, you know, they always got a weird way somehow of coming back to the middle, right? Both teams kind of, you know, raise up or fall down to the other team's level of competition. Like, rivalry games are weird. You never know what's going to happen. But all else aside, you look at this game and you just can't find too many ways in which the Patriots will be able to compete. And again, like I said, if the Bills come out and they're ready to play, they're not taking their foot off the gas, it's tough to see them not winning by 30, 40 points, having their starters benched by the fourth quarter.
I agree, Justin, completely with everything you just said. And I would also say that I think the Bills are 14.5 point favorites this week. And to me, that number sounds low. Yep. I mean, you know, I would never bet against the Patriots because it's just not in my DNA.
Right.
I mean, but if I was being a cold, heartless, ruthless, cold, hard better, I would lay those 14.5 points. I really think Buffalo runs away with this one.
Totally. 14 points sounds like a lot. It's not a lot in context.
It's not a lot with this defense.
If this
defense that really couldn't stop Arizona, you know, for a team that just hung 50 back-to-back weeks, no, it's not a lot of points.
No.
All right. Any other thoughts, Justin, about this New England Patriots franchise before we wrap it up?
No, I mean, look, I just, I'd like to see a little bit more fight from him at the end of this year. I think, you know, no matter what we see, though, I think we have to be cautiously optimistic. I don't think this is a team that's just going to flip a switch. I don't think that these players are just going to flip a switch. But you know what? I think if anything, what we should be looking for, it's less about the individual players at this point and more so about the coaching and the organization. And I think these last three games will help us get a little bit more clarity in terms of, like, hopefully the direction they're going to head and what they should do. Because, you know what, if the next three games look like the last three or the three before that, I just don't see how the Crafts really have a choice.
Agreed. And I mean, they need to come out and play hard, and they need to show well in these games. Maybe not win, but show well. Like, they're Gerard Mayo. You know, you can't lose this game 52-10. If this is an ugly game and they look flat and they look listless and they look like they're not playing hard for Gerard Mayo, I mean, these last three games could all potentially be the nail in the coffin. I think we both agree on that. And I think, you know, like, you hear, like, some of the people that have been defending Mayo all year, like Mike Reese and Burt Breer, now have come around in the last few days and been like, he's in trouble. And so when you hear that, I mean, I think there's truth in that, Justin. And I really feel like if they come out this weekend and they get totally embarrassed in Buffalo, I mean, that's another big step on the road towards Mayo being one and done.
Agree. And I think because you can read into that a step further and say that, hey, his team is fully aware of the headlines, of the rumors, right? They're probably more aware so of anybody in terms of what's going on, what's at stake. If they give up and they don't come out and fight, you know, to try to secure their coach's job, I think that's just another big indictment. And I think it tells you a lot about Gerard Mayo in the culture, in the way that this team views him and in his tenure here. If these guys come out and quit, I think they're basically giving their blessing, saying, hey, get this guy out of here. Let's see what we can do next year.
You see that all the time. Yeah. I feel like across the league, where if a team doesn't want to play for the coach, they come out and they play a flat, emotionless game. And I mean, that's kind of what happened on Sunday last week against the Cardinals. If it happens again, and it happens the rest of the year is like that. I mean, it's just going to, and what it really speaks to me, he's going to have a bigger mountain to climb to get back to where he needs to be. So there is something, I think, to watch in this game. If you're a Patriots fan, I'll say two things. It's Drake May. You want to see how he looks, and you want to see how this team reacts, because if this is a total debacle, that has relevance to 2025, no question about it.
Yep. I agree.
All right, brother. Anything else?
No, I think that about does it.
Awesome, man. All right. Well, we will see y'all next week. I want to thank everyone that listened, watched. Find us on Facebook, Instagram. You can grab this podcast on Spotify, on Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. We will be back next week with another episode. We'll record. We're going to record separately around the league. So that'll be something you can look forward to drop in a couple days. And keep an eye open for that. But we will be back next week. Enjoy this weekend, everyone, and have a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, and just a wonderful season.